Welcome to Poptopia.
Welcome to Poptopia, your podcast for all things pop culture. I'm your host, Paul French, and it is Monday, June 23rd, 2008. And on today's show, we say goodbye to a true comedy giant. We look at some more funny movie math, and we also do a follow-up on the intelligence piece from the other week. Okay, so let's start off with some sad news. Just announced that George Carlin passed away yesterday on Sunday around 5:55 p.m. Carlin, who had a history of heart trouble, went to St. John's Health Center in Santa Monica yesterday afternoon, complaining of chest pain, and died later in the evening. He had performed as recently as last weekend at the Orleans Casino and Hotel in Las Vegas, and he was 71. Of course, Carlin, best known for the seven words that you can't say on television. And in fact, most of those words still on the taboo list. And in fact, when he uttered all seven of those words in 1972 at a show in Milwaukee, he was arrested on charges of disturbing the peace, freed on bail, and then exonerated when a Wisconsin judge dismissed the case, saying that it was indecent, but citing free speech and the lack of any, you know, disturbance of any kind of peace. Of course, you know, we know a lot about his stand-up. He was also he had two television shows, as well as having several movies, best known, of course, in movies as Rufus in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. But overall, 23 comedy albums, 14 HBO specials, 3 books, and not bad. You know, truly a giant in comedy. And I can remember listening to him growing up in the early 80s, you know, when A Place for My Stuff came out. And I can remember listening to, you know, the Sunday Funnies on a local radio station, and they would have, you'd hear Carlin, you'd hear, you know, old Cosby, all that kind of stuff. And just fantastic comedy. And you know, Carlin was truly a voice that didn't lose its edge as he aged. You know, he still looked at things with that same same acerbic worldview, and so truly one to be missed, because you still always you always got what you paid for with him. Just speaking of Cosby, I actually saw him the other night out in Kitchener. He was doing a show, and although he ended off with one of his classic routines, which is the dentist routine from the Bill Cosby Himself album back in the early 80s, he did a lot of new material, and it was actually edgier than I expected, but pretty laid back. He's a laid back dude now, and so that's what I mean when I say about the difference. You know, I mean, Cosby still great at the stand up, but you know, much more laid back, a bit more reserved. Still kind of, you know, I mean, edgy is not usually a word you associate with Bill Cosby, but it is, you know, I mean, there's some of the stuff that he said is not what you would have expected from him, you know, if all you're used to is the Cosby Show, for example. But Carlin was one, you know, he showed no signs of slowing down, so he will truly be missed. I did a piece the other week on the show Intelligence from the CBC. And just looking into why it got canceled, and this was prompted by Derek from the Deliberate Noise Network. And, you know, really what it came down to was ratings. And I guess it needs to be a bit of perspective into sort of what the ratings mean here. Because in Canada, that you're talking about a lower population base. So it was a show that was basically consistently pulling in 350,000 viewers. Now, the first thing you think is, well, 350, are you crazy? Like, how can they, you know, do anything with this show? But by as a way of comparison, an episode of American Idol on the Canadian station pulls in about 800,000. So it's doing about half as well as American Idol. So you look at that. I'm not sure what the average U.S. ratings are for American Idol right now, but say they're sitting at around 14 million. So you'd be looking at about 7 million. So, you know, shows with about with consistent 7 million sometimes last, sometimes not so much. So anyway, so that is just to give a bit of perspective, but it really did come down to ratings, although 350,000 for the CBC, not all that bad. I can only imagine that there must have been the expense in producing the show. They also let go J-Pod at the same time and MVP. And it may just be that these shows were getting expensive to produce. Certainly the CBC isn't getting any information out there about it. And it's a shame. You've got some really strong shows, and it's a difficult market because in this case they are competing with U.S. shows that have that sort of more, they're more rooted in the zeitgeist, and so it's a little bit harder for example J-Pod, based on the Douglas Coupland novel, to grab hold of an audience. And of course, the producers are saying, and this is Larry Sugar, the producer of Intelligence, saying that the CBC was not adequately promoting the show. No other show was intended to meet the mandate of Canadian broadcasters than a show that was written by one of the great Canadian writers. He was referring to Chris Haddock, who was the head writer and executive producer on Intelligence. He said, "To not fully support it is beyond me." And really, it comes down to, do they throw more money into shows that are drawing low ratings in order to try and increase the ratings? Where does the tail wag the dog here? And so I don't have any good answers as to why it was canceled, but I think a lot of it has to do with promotion and ratings and a lack of both. Looking into other things, I'm just thinking of, with Intelligence and Flashpoint being shows that were looked at breaking into the U.S. market during the writer's strike. We got 7 days left. Yeah, 7 days until the Screen Actors Guild has to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to strike. They have 7 days to negotiate a deal with major producers and studios before the TV and theatrical contract expires. Now, the sort of just adding to what the leadership of the Screen Actors Guild has to deal with, AFTRA actually undercut them and already made a deal, and it doesn't go over too well with the SAG folks, especially because there's nearly 40,000 actors in both unions, and they kind of had it. They were hoping that. That all this would work out for them, and it's really making it kind of difficult. So you've ended up with two unions that had jointly negotiated their main contracts with the AMPTP for nearly three decades, but this time AFTRA decided to go it alone. And there's always been a lot of tension between SAG and AFTRA. And so the AFTRA deal actually includes increases in residual payments earned online, so internet downloads, online streaming, etc., but no provisions for a raise in the residuals from DVD sales. And this is a key demand that SAG has in their label talks. Of course, the studios are still railing against that one. They didn't give that deal to the writers, and they're in no rush to offer it to the actors either at this point. So really, SAG's made very little progress in their negotiations. They expect that the talks will extend past the June 30th deadline. And so everyone's a little worried. We already had that 100-day writer's strike, and it really sort of derailed a lot of projects and put a lot of production workers out of work, and certainly had a huge impact on the economy in Hollywood, obviously. And so they're wondering that is SAG slowing down the negotiations in order to see sort of what happens, because they've got this vote no campaign against AFTRA. The AMPTP has blamed SAG's preoccupation with voting down the AFTRA contract. What they want is for all of the the actors that are in both unions to vote no to and not ratify the deal, because then basically it means there's no way. The idea being that with AFTRA there's kind of loopholes that they can work through to get people. To get people working, and of course SAG doesn't want that. They want everything to be shut down. So the most high profile member in the weekend was Tom Hanks, who signed an email message from more than 100 actors urging a yes vote on the recently brokered contract. So it just gets uglier and uglier. So will the AMPTP offer SAG a settlement proposal, sort of looking similar to the AFTRA deal at the 11th hour? Will there be the fact that there's the campaign against the AFTRA contract that makes that unlikely to be ratified? Either way, if no deal's reached before the SAG contract expires, the Guild will likely extend the contract because they're not looking at a strike authorization yet. But everyone's a little bit edgy, and one really hopes that they don't end up deciding, hey, you know, we're just going to strike anyway. That was a big issue that a lot of people had with the writer's strike, was that rather than saying, okay, let's keep talking, they just basically at midnight said, okay, that's it, we're going on strike. And again, you know, people say, but they won. I'm not so sure that they did. Anyway, this weekend at the box office, number one movie was Get Smart. I went to see it on Saturday, actually, and here's sort of a brief review of it. Well, basically, you're looking at remaking the Cold War classic sitcom Get Smart, you know, with the all that great Don Adams dialogue, and just sort of the way that he delivered it. And Steve Carell does a decent job of it. However, I found at the beginning, although he started out kind of very Maxwell Smartish, by about half hour in, he really felt like you were watching Michael Scott, Secret Agent. You know, he was very much his office character, with the, you know, trying to seem like he's really confident, but is really a bit of a buffoon. And that was another big problem I had with the movie, was the fact that so much of the comedy hinges on this guy being a buffoon. And yet they wanted to make him competent so that you could really root for the guy. So you have them struggling back and forth between, he's a buffoon, but he's really good at what he does, except that he's not good at what he does, but he's really good at what he does. And so there was, you know, that kind of disconnect really made things a bit difficult. And at times, a lot of the action was really, really good, surprisingly good. I really didn't expect it to reach that level, and really was quite pleased that it did. But as I say, that whole back and forth of is he competent, isn't he, was really distracting, I found. You think you can't go wrong with David Koechner and the other guys escaping me, Terry Crews, who plays the dad on Everybody Hates Chris. They played a couple of other agents, and a lot of the stuff that they were given was pretty groan-inducing material, and these guys are definitely capable of better than that. So, you know, I'd give it maybe 3 stars out of 5. Decent, some fun, lots of laughs, but you know, definitely flawed. But, I mean, really, what are we expecting? Anyway, it took in $39.2 million over the weekend, which, so, you know, fantastic. Looking at the other big comedy release was at number 4 with $14 million. That's Mike Myers, The Love Guru. And you know, I really wish this was a better top 5. So, number 2 spot was Kung Fu Panda. And actually, it was a bit of a tie between Kung Fu Panda and The Incredible Hulk. And that leads me to another follow-up of what we did last week, is looking at the math on Hulk. Okay, so you got the 2003 movie. You got the 2008 movie. And I already went into the differences between the production budgets. It was about $20 million difference and that kind of thing. Anyway, the 2003 movie did $62.1 million in its opening weekend, suffered a 70% drop to $18.63 million the following weekend. This one opened with $55.4 million and in week 2 did $21.6 million. It's not as steep a drop, but it's still a 61% drop-off in revenue. And, you know, that always tells you that it's bad word of mouth. You know, it's people saying, yeah, didn't really dig it. So that's where that movie stands, right? And if you look at the 2003 film, in the first 2 weeks, it grossed a total of $80.7 million, whereas this one has grossed a total of $77 million. And this one's the hit. Hollywood math. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Okay, so I've given you a really disjointed look at what the box office was, but here's what we have. Number 5 was The Happening with $10 million, 4 The Love Guru with $14 million, Incredible Hulk with 21.6 million, number three, and Kung Fu Panda, 21.7 million. All the time we got for today. Comments as always, welcome to poptopiapodcast@gmail.com. Have a great week.